And now to something that may be poignantly familiar to many of you, what writer Olivia Judson calls the task. When her father died in 2011, Judson and her brother faced the task of sorting through all the possessions in their parents' Baltimore home. Some were touchingly mundane, others much, much more intimate and revealing, like the perfume-imbued scarves and private diaries that transported Judson into her parents' inner lives in a way that was impossible while they were alive. It took Judson and her brother 2 years to complete the task because, as she writes in a New York Times series, so many of the objects felt as if they had the power to stop time. Here's Judson reading an excerpt from one of her columns.
Some decisions are easy. Hotel soap? Use. Sugar packets? Ditto. Plastic dolls? Throw out. Old Christmas cards? Ditto. Soviet posters? The first four struck me as powerful and unusual. I decided to take them to be restored and framed. One day, I will hang them on a wall. But Stalin? I don't want a picture of a mass murderer, nor do I want to sell one. The thought of putting him on eBay, as one person suggested, made me feel queasy. So after discussion with friends and the sending of a couple of emails, I arranged to donate him to a library, which is great, until I realized that I'd devoted several hours to getting rid of a single piece of paper. And up, in my father's office, 54 filing cabinet drawers, all of them full, awaited me.
That's Olivia Judson reading an excerpt from her 8-part series called The Task, which appears on the New York Times website. Olivia, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
When you first had to begin this task of going through your parents' home, you know, your mother had died, 20 years before. How did that make you feel?
The first thing that happened is I felt incredibly overwhelmed. I cried. I said to my brother, we're never going to get out of here. It's going to take us 200 years to leave. You know, getting rid of people's possessions is partly getting rid of them. And so, in fact, my mother had died extremely suddenly in the May of 1993. And none of us had ever gone through her letters or her personal papers or her photograph albums. And in fact, I left that until the last, even once we'd started doing the task. And I discovered things about her I really hadn't known. I mean, she had kept at the bottom of an old trunk. I found all of her party invitations from when she was a teenager.
Huh.
You know, I mean, she died, you know, when I was only 23. And so in many ways, I feel that I never really got to know who she was as between two adults.
Do you think that the process of figuring out what to do with all of these things, both your mother's and your father's, helped you understand them better as adults?
When I was a teenager, they went through a pretty difficult patch. And the thing that's nice is that they fell in love again later. But what I hadn't realized was that their relationship had been turbulent right from the beginning. And so I certainly feel that I began to understand both of them quite a lot more clearly. But it's very difficult to go through somebody else's letters. I mean, it feels quite intrusive, and reading somebody's diary is even more so.
Right. But you did end up doing just that.
I did end up reading the diaries. It was something, for a very long time, I just kept them. I wasn't sure if I wanted to read them. And I had a dialogue with myself about why I kept diaries, because if I thought I could understand why I was keeping them, I would have a clearer idea of how to read somebody else's. And so I thought a lot about the fact that sometimes when I'm writing in my own journal, it's because I'm in a bad mood, and it doesn't necessarily reflect who I normally am. And so I decided to read them with as much openness and non-judgmentalness as I could generate. And actually, they were fascinating. And the thing that I really discovered is that she was a lot more like me than I realized.
Huh.
I think you could read my diaries and read hers and not be sure who had written them.
Did that come as a surprise to you?
It very much did, because she was an amazing mother, and I think part of her gift of being a mother was that she didn't necessarily show very much about her own desires to her children. So I feel like I didn't know her really very well, and the diaries were kind of a revelation. I had no idea how much, for example, when she traveled, she felt totally free, which is something I feel also.
Mm-hmm.
And also just very how similar we are in the kinds of things that we remark on. It was surprising.
You know, as I was reading your series, what struck me as sort of a beautiful tragedy about having to do this task is that as the adult children of our deceased parents, as we're going through their things, we wish so desperately that we had understood them in the way that we can now, when it's just their things that are left behind. Does that make any sense to you?
I think that one of the sort of biggest causes of melancholy is this feeling that there are conversations you would like to have that you can never have. And yet, at the same time, you do have them. They kind of go on in your head.
Yeah.
But I think that there are certainly things that one ends up regretting. I mean, there was a moment that when my father wrote a letter to a friend talking about how how lonely he was, and I realized that I could have gone to see him at that particular moment, for example. And so there are also, you know, you also want to say, hey, look, you know, I'm really sorry. There are things that I would have done differently if I could have.
Writer and evolutionary biologist Olivia Judson. This is Here and Now. It's Here and Now. Now more of our conversation with Olivia Judson about what she calls the task, the long process of sorting through her parents' belongings after they died. And before the break, Olivia, you talked about how with each object you sorted through, you felt as if you were having this long overdue conversation with your parents, even though they were gone. And I can only imagine what those conversations in your heart and mind were like, because your mother died when you were just 23, and your father was such an interesting man, a journalist who wrote a famous book about the history of molecular biology. And I point that out because in your New York Times series, you write about how you and your brother wanted to take a bunch of things to a consignment store. But then the more you thought about it, there was that conversation again with each of these objects, and you decided to keep them all.
Yeah, it was a disaster. We were terrible at getting rid of things. And it's because so many things kind of wave at you and say, hey, you know, remember when we were in Hawaii together? Or, I mean, it's strange because, you know, how can you possibly value a broken sofa? And yet the broken sofa has, you know, your friend Andrea sitting on it reading The Clockwork Orange. And it conjures that.
Right. So you write about some of the more surprising things that you found amongst your father's collection of things. And my eyes went wide when you wrote about the fact that he had one of the original pieces of Watson and Crick's model, first model of the double helix of DNA.
My eyes went wide, too. I actually don't quite know how my father came to have it. My guess is that he was given it by Max Perutz, who was the director of one of the big laboratories in Cambridge and who won the Nobel Prize at the same time as Jim Watson and Francis Crick. And he was a very important figure that my father talked to when he was working on his book, The Eighth Day of Creation. And my guess is that Max gave it to him. When I looked it up, I realized that actually my father had described this very piece of DNA in his book, but I didn't realize that it was sitting upstairs in an old envelope in a filing cabinet.
Was that one of the moments where you felt like you were having that, another one of those unspoken conversations with your father as you were going through the house? Because I can imagine you holding this piece of science history, essentially, and saying, you know, Dad, how did you get this?
Well, and why didn't you tell me? Yeah, it was a moment of great astonishment. And of course, every so often I'd try to persuade him that maybe we should try to do something about his office while he was still alive, but he never wanted to. So we never went through any of these things. So yeah, I had no idea.
So in the reading that we had you do, you sort of end with this thought that it took you hours and hours and hours to deal with one piece of paper. How many times did that happen?
It took us 2 years to get out, so it happened a lot. He seems to have kept absolutely everything, including disputes about whether he's filed his expense accounts on time, but also what journalists call herograms, people congratulating him on his story. It was all there, and I found myself just completely hypnotized by it. I mean, it was a glimpse into a life that he would occasionally talk. I mean, it was before I was born, and he would occasionally talk about it in a sort of jovial sort of way, but I never knew very much about it, and, you know, here it all was.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the Watson and Crick model as one of the more surprising things that you found. But what was one of the more meaningful things that you discovered in your father's house?
There were surprising moments. I mean, one of the moments that was sort of most haunting for me was when I was going through a chest of drawers in the hallway, and I picked up a scarf that had belonged to my mother, and I put it on. And it smelled of the perfume that she used to wear. And it was a very, very strong moment when I almost thought that she was still there. And I think that it was moments like that that were very bittersweet, and yet also that made it much more than just going through papers and clothes and books. And it had a kind of emotional punch from time to time that I'm really grateful for, because it also conjured up a lot of thoughts and feelings and recollections.
How important was that to you? Because, I mean, when your mother died, as you said, she had died suddenly, and it was 20 years later, after your father's death, that you had the chance to go through your mother's things. I mean, I imagine that there was some essential grieving that had been put on hold in you for decades.
Yes, I think that that's right. And it was also very interesting to see how many things that she had kept from, you know, when we were small. I discovered that she had kept a lot of our early paintings and drawings, included. One was labeled in her handwriting, Olivia's First Octopus. And rather surprisingly, actually, it was recognizably an octopus.
The biologist in you was evident from early on.
That's right. No, it was quite amusing. You know, it was a kind of long catharsis. I mean, I think there's a lot of physical work, but there's also, I think, an opportunity to reflect.
Did you feel at peace with your parents after the several years that this process took?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I loved them both very much. I mean, my relationship with my father was more complicated because it had gone on a lot longer. And he was a very demanding and complicated person. And it's been very touching to me how many people have said to me, I went through something exactly like this. Yeah, one person I know sold his family house and then bought it back a few years later. You know, I think in our society we don't have formal mourning anymore.
Right.
And I think that this makes it very hard because there isn't a way to express publicly what you're going through and what you're feeling. You know, clearing out a house in some ways is a lot of work, but it's also an opportunity to cry.
Right. I mean, as you said that, it just occurred to me that this may be one of the last remaining, even if it's private and profoundly personal, rituals that we go through in terms of mourning the death of loved ones.
So one of the things that my father did after my mother died is he took her wedding ring and he had it, he had a black onyx band put through the middle of it. And he wore it himself as a mourning ring. And mourning rings were very popular in the 18th century, and they would sometimes be a bit macabre with bits of hair and you know, that kind of thing included in them. But I decided to take the wedding ring, now a mourning ring, and wear it myself, and it fits me on my middle finger. I like it that both my parents wore it and that now I'm wearing it, and it kind of feels like a sort of homage to them that I can carry with me. I look at it and I think about them.
Well, Olivia Judson is an evolutionary biologist and writer based at Imperial College London. She's the author of Dr. Tatiana's Sex Advice to All Creation. Her 8-part series called The Task appears on thenewyorktimes.com. Olivia, thank you so much for sharing your story and your experience and the lives of your parents with us.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Now, I bet that a lot of you hearing this have had a very similar experience, having to go through the task of clearing out your parents' belongings after they pass away. Let us know what it was like and whether or not you had those conversations, as Olivia Judson said, with the memories of your parents as you underwent the task. Go to hereandnow.org and leave us a comment. You're listening to Here and Now.